Welcome to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
a series of honest conversations about opportunities,
challenges,
and joy in ministry today.
These episodes are inspired by interactions with ministry leaders from across the country
as they explore possibilities,
learn from broad perspectives,
take risks,
and cultivate candid discussions
that generate disruptive creativity.
Hi, this is Mark Ramsey with the Ministry Collaborative, and I'm with my colleagues Jennifer Maxell and Ryan Bonfilio. I'm coming in at the end of the five extraordinary episodes that they have recorded in dialogue with theological leaders across the country about the future of theological education. And I thought it would be good at the end of those five episodes to talk to them and see what their impressions are after these terrific conversations. So, Jennifer and Ryan, I'm so grateful for you doing this, and hello.
Hi, Mark.
Thanks, Mark. It's great to be here.
Glad to be here as well.
As you look back on these five conversations you had, what strikes you most prominently now as you think back on them?
I think one of the things for me, Mark, that's kind of a recurring theme in all of this is that theological education, as we have historically and traditionally imagined it, is shifting rapidly to something other than the MDiv and its close cousins, MTS, and so on and so forth. That is still theological education. People are going to seminaries, pursuing knowledge and credentialing through those degree programs. But theological education is diversifying beyond that. It's not contained just in those degree programs, nor in degree programs at all. It's seeping out beyond the walls of the academy and into more informal circles of conversation and practice and learning and cohorts. And I think I find that really exciting that we're beginning to see this diversification of what theological education looks like.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I also think that there is a move away from theological education as the house of professionalism and professional ministry, that people who are looking to theological education are looking as much in terms of their own spiritual, religious development as practitioners, that then enables them to go out and have the tools to do all these cool and wonderful things that God is calling us into. So it's not that we're just going to get the credentials to become a pastor, but we are trying to live fully into our call, identity, and purpose, and looking to theological education to give us a toolkit, if you will, for doing that.
Yeah, you're nailing it, Jen. That's right on. Because what that then includes is the sort of theological education that happens as a channel to lay ministry beyond the degree program. So the things that are bubbling to the surface in congregations and informal networks. So it's that, it's the sort of pre-seminary work or the work that takes the place of seminary for many lay leaders, but also it happens beyond seminary, right? It's in demon programs and pastors who need to realize that of course seminary has not fully prepared them to answer every question that they will ever face in their congregational ministry. So that process of learning and growth and reflection has to go beyond. It doesn't end with the conference of a degree. You might say it begins with the conference of a degree.
What you're raising is just an immense complexity, which I think you all represented well, as did your guests in the series, because we do need equipped leaders of congregations, and we need equipped and empowered lay leaders in congregations. One of the things, certainly in the pandemic, that we've been talking about in our network is a fragility to most congregations' sense of their nature and purpose. And the difficulty we're seeing for many congregations, and I say this with respect to the pain that they are going through, but to look beyond their own constituent needs out into what the church should do. And so it seems like when I look then back at congregations and think of theological education, this is a tense time and it's an intense time. I serve on the board of a seminary, and it's no surprise for mine or any of the rest of them that viability, sustainability are squarely in front of every one of these institutions. But also what you're saying is who gets to pick who gets in and gets out, which I also saw as a theme, the theme of belonging, the theme of community, which is not something, at least when I think of my seminary experience or many others, was ever raised. Can you talk about belonging and community, both in terms of the racial dynamics, but just also overall?
Yeah. When I think of this question, Mark, what I think of is this idea that theological education's assumptions are showing, right? theological education slip is showing, that we are seeing the product of what our assumptions have been in terms of who one should be leading theological education, who has the chops, if you will, to teach, who has the authority to make decisions about what is important theologically, who decides who gets in, and then who decides what those people who are let in the gate then are supposed to learn. I know when I was in seminary, I remember I took a practical theology class. And in my ignorance at that time, I thought, wow, this is the opportunity when all of this theory starts to make sense. Imagine my surprise when I got in the class and realized this was basically a research class. And that was not what I was looking for. I kept wanting an opportunity to make this real. And so I think what we're seeing now is that there is a demand for real education that deals with what people are really dealing with in the world, and not just in the church, that people are really wrestling with their own spirituality. People are wrestling with their own assumptions, their own expectations. They're wrestling with what they're watching on the news and seeing play out in their community. And they want a place where they can do that, that is safe, that does have a level of authority, that has resources, and does have some, I think, historical perspective and relevance that it can bring so that, again, people can really do the work of ministry in a real and profound way on the ground.
You know, one of the things I think, Jen, that I heard from our conversation with Willie Jennings is the way in which belonging is more than about just diversity. So I'll take my own seminary as an example at Candler. Among historically white institutions, we have the most diverse faculty in North America. We have 45% are non-Caucasian at Candler. And so we are great with diversity among our faculty. Our student body, Caucasian students are less than 45% of our student body. So there's this incredible diversity, 43 different denominations represented in our seminary. There's diversity in all different directions, and we have evolved rapidly. But here's the thing, the metaphor that comes to mind is that we are really good at inviting diverse voices to the table. But the reality is, white hands and white minds have made that table. White hands and white minds are still about the work of creating the food that served at that table. And so we need to be really careful not to conflate diversity with belonging. We need to think about the structures, the curriculum, the ideas and thoughts that have formed the very idea of theological education. That's why it's not enough just to give scholarships to non-Caucasian students to open up the seminary. That's a nice first step, but we need to be really careful in those cases that we are not trying to bring in non-Caucasian students as if that was the solution, and then what we're bringing them into is a deeply white, and in some cases, white normative organization that actually can be really destructive to the experience of some students.
Yeah, you're right on it with that, Brian. One of the things that I think about is the incredible burden that many people of color, women, just anybody who is an other, has to bear in any theological educational institution. That in addition to just the work that is often challenging and new and is opening people up to perspectives and ideas that they never experienced before, there's also the work of just navigating the institution itself. That just showing up in the classroom and having to think in ways and having to kind of put your own historical and sociological experience on hold to be able to grasp what is being presented is one of the challenges that I think that a lot of people who are entering into seminary, frankly, are interested in shouldering. You know, they're not willing to do that added step anymore. And I think that that's something that theological institutions have to wrestle with. And I think a lot of our interviews bore that out.
This is the point that I will say before I say what I'm about to say as a prelude. I am grateful for much of the academy and what it has produced through the years and how it has formed me and equipped me and for the work of ministry. And in most theological institutions I know now, there are people that I am deeply grateful for and the work they are doing. And I know you would join me with that. And I don't want to give short shrift to that because I do believe that. However, it does seem to me a lot of the conversations you had and what you've even said here today leads us to who gets to teach and what gets taught. And it does seem to me long past is the day where most of the people in seminaries as instructors had experience in congregational ministry. That is long past, and there are good economic and academic reasons, and we could parse those later. But with that, the guilds, the academic guilds, seem to have a lock grip on at least mediating who gets to teach and what gets taught. Can you say something about that?
Amen. No, that's right. And the suspicion works in both directions, right? I think that as the academy becomes more highly specialized, especially in terms of the production of knowledge and research, it gets increasingly disconnected from the life of the church. Not only, Mark, in terms of do professors have pastoral experience, but even the connectivity between the seminary and the life and mission of the church. But it goes in the other direction, too. I think the church is keeping the seminary at an arm's distance. It has outsourced theological education to them such that what remains in the church is either no education or a very simplified reductionistic version of Christian faith formation and education that, frankly, I think many people are tired of. I think the fact that people aren't showing up in Sunday school classes and Bible studies the way they used to, I think is a reflection of the fact that the church needs the academy, but so too does the academy need the church.
Yeah, and I think that one of the trends that we're seeing, particularly throughout the pandemic, is now you see education not just being housed in the seminary, that you have individuals, that you have groups that are now starting their own educational forums. You have the Circle of Sacred Fire. We interviewed Kelly Farrell, for example, that now there is this recognition that if the seminary won't open up and extend itself and let certain voices in to teach, we'll just start our own. Mm-hmm. And I see that as both a positive thing, and I think it can be incredibly dangerous if seminaries don't take notice and don't start partnering and start understanding that, again, the tolerance for not just in seminary, but just in society in general, that there is no longer this idea that, well, we'll just go in here and suck it up and deal with it to get the degree. Now there's the feeling that, you know what, I'm going to do something that's really edifying. And if I can't get it at the seminary, then I'll go ahead to this organization and I'll take classes in my church basement for 6 weeks and I'll get it there. And I think that is one of the trends that we're seeing coming out of the pandemic and just this whole different way of being in the world.
A lot of what we're talking about here is gatekeeping. Let's get the other leg of the stool in here, which are denominations. What role do you see denominations playing and how would you like to adjust that?
Yeah, you know, historically, Mark, denominations have been at the center, the core partners for seminaries and divinity schools, not only because they need seminaries for accreditation, but they're the core financial partners. They're the core conceptual partners for what seminary ought to be. I think that will always be with us in some degree. There will always be Methodist seminaries, Presbyterian seminaries, Catholic seminaries. But I think what is shifting very rapidly is that the denomination is now not the only nor even the primary partner for seminaries. I think what's emerging are local churches, congregations, are going to become the primary partner, such that seminaries become a sort of hub that brings together diverse churches and helps to mobilize them as sites for in-depth theological education. And once we make that change from denomination to congregation as the core partner, it's going to be radically different how we pursue theological education. And quite paradoxically, it's actually going to bring us back to a really ancient model. Long before there were seminaries and denominations as we know them, theological education happened in local churches. They were the sites and vehicles for theological education. So in a certain way, I think the hope in the future for what we're trying to do in theological education involves going back to a really ancient model of how seminary training is connected to churches.
Yeah, and I think that denominations can be especially helpful in broadening this idea of community that we talk about a lot in theological education that we don't always actually exemplify. Denominations have the ability to help seminaries to become centralized in very specific communities that they otherwise would not have access to in a very real and tangible way. But again, it requires that denominations see themselves situated differently and see the seminary situated differently. That instead of being the gatekeeper, as you say, that they are actually a conduit, that they are actually the vessel through with the relationship between communities and theological education can happen. And I think if we're able to make that shift, then I think that there's a lot of possibilities that then become open for the role of denominations going forward.
I agree with you, but as you lay all that out, Jennifer, it seems to me that's like saying right now, go climb Mount Everest three times without oxygen and then we'll move. That's a high, high challenge. And Ryan, back to what you're saying about the focus or the locus of theological education be congregations. If I'm listening to this and I'm the pastor of or a significant congregational leader in a fairly large church, I can say, oh yeah, we can see how that might happen. What if the person listening to us right now is a pastor of a 200-member church or, you know, a lay person in a 150-member congregation where they're already mowing the grass and helping with the nursery and everything else?
Right.
How do we fit what you said, which I love, into you are also going to become a seminary or at least a locus of theological education?
First off, let me just say we're not just asking pastors of small churches with small staffs and small budgets to do more,
right,
to figure out how to become a seminary. That's not the vision of it. But there's a couple things to recognize. One is that theological education happens already at local churches, right? Theological education bubbles up from the lived experiences and stories of people and pastors with diverse voices. It doesn't just come down from seminary. Mm-hmm. So the question is how, even in small congregations, do you begin to mobilize opportunities and catalyze those conversations where theological education can bubble up? One possibility that we're trying to do at Candler is we're trying to get smaller churches connected to one another, especially across denominational lines and across racial and cultural lines, get them connected to one another in the same geographic region to begin to convene conversations that matter to their churches and communities, such that it's not just the task of one small church to do it, but how do we form networks where we can begin to work and think together, whether it's about racial healing or poverty or leadership in the church? How do we convene conversations for those networks of churches?
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And I would just say that I think collaboration is the key, which I think is something that we haven't done really well in the kingdom, period,
yeah,
not
right,
to mention in denominations or seminaries.
Speaking of another Mount Everest we need to climb, yes.
Right. I mean, when I look at what we're doing at the Ministry Collaborative with our Sprint cohort, some of our virtual cohorts, and leaning now into working with congregations, those are the type of resources and those are the type of opportunities for smaller churches, church leaders, and smaller congregations to be able to pull on and take advantage of the resources mm-hmm. that are out there without them having to do more, pay more, be more.
Right.
And I think that's a really powerful opportunity that we're going to see growing as we go forward.
I want to go back, Jennifer, to what you said about professionalism of clergy as one of the sticking points here. Mm-hmm. I've already on a different podcast done my rant on what is in many denominations the installation / coronation of pastors. I don't know why we do that except to send a subliminal or not so subliminal message. This pastor is special and you better know that, as opposed to seeing it more as a community thing. But we did this series. The impetus was what we are seeing among the pastors and the congregations we're working with in the Ministry Collaborative, a real hunger for an equipping and a theological way of thinking that is important. And we just kept hearing it and hearing it and hearing it. Our job here, obviously, and you all were so good on these five episodes, is not to skewer traditional theological education, but it is to kind of speak truth into this and say, things are not working with this. So with that, I have two questions, which may stop preaching and go to meddling. Where do you see pockets where people or groups or institutions are getting it? And the corollary is, honestly, where are the sticking points? The need seems so obvious. Why aren't we moving faster toward it?
Yeah, I mean, that's a complex question. I think one thing that we are seeing, it's almost like we give this big installation and everything. So then when we give you all the grunt work and stuff that you have to do, you think you're special and now you're excited to actually do it, right? But I think what we're seeing is a deep hunger for what I think it was Denise Thorpe who called it deep learning. Mm-hmm. That there is a desire for something more, something deeper, a richer type of engagement. and that it's no longer just about the figurehead or these kind of shallow ticking off of the duties of the pastor. And I think what is happening is now that there is this move towards the value of that deepening knowledge and that deepening relationship. Mm-hmm. That I think before it was, okay, let's go to this session and find out the 10 keys to leadership. There's nothing wrong with that. But what we're finding is the 10 keys to leadership don't work if the leadership is depleted and exhausted and having their own dark night of the soul. Mm-hmm. That part of what is happening is that now we're starting to look inward in order to look outward. Mm-hmm. I'm in a D-Men program at Pittsburgh Seminary. And what I love about their D-Men programs, they have one that they just started on creative writing and theology. And so again, it opens up this idea of theological education to creatives and writers, to people who may be pastoring that just have a passion for writing, who are not necessarily looking to go and teach writing in a seminary or someplace, but just want to fully live out their call and what God is calling them to. And I think those are the places where we see getting it right. I also think places who are involved in the collaborative process, where it's not just the institution, but it's the institution and it's those organizations that are doing grassroots work in the community. We saw a lot of this when we look at what was happening with voter rights here in Georgia during the last political campaign. Organizations, churches, institutions all partnering and coming together to meet the needs that are existing in our society at large.
Yeah, thanks, Jen. I appreciate that perspective. And I would add, in terms of those who are getting it, I don't think there's any one institution that's getting it all, nor do I think we should think of institutions as missing it all.
Right.
I think what we're seeing are pockets of innovation and creativity that are bubbling to the surface. Now, what I've observed is that the most creativity is happening on the margins or on the non-primary degree program. So whether, Jen, your example with Pittsburgh and the D-Min program, I think of various things that Candler is doing outside of the MDiv program. I think of things that Todd Bolsinger is doing in Fuller that's about equipping and training laity. I think there's some really beautiful things happening across denominations and in different places. What I think is the biggest ship to turn, and the one that's not turning much at all in my experience, is the MDiv. I think MDiv curricula are stuck where they have been for decades. And I think the problem with that, or the challenge, is that the MDiv is, from a financial perspective, what keeps many seminaries afloat. And so when it's perceived that the institutional longevity of a seminary is at stake in terms of income and tuition, you're least likely to innovate and experiment. Because to innovate and experiment, you have to be willing to fail. And I'm not seeing seminaries willing to do that with their core programs. It's happening on the outside. What I suspect is going to happen in the future is that what seminaries learn from these side experiments and these non-core degree programs is ultimately going to become the model for how to reimagine the MDiv, but we're not there yet.
Yeah, to say to a 35-year-old who is a mother of three kids, we need you to move to a city, not your own, and spend 3 years, and we're going to tack on some other things too, internships and CPE and stuff like that, all which is valuable, to get a degree, which then will land you maybe in a job that you can pay off your loans in a decade or two, is not a model. Now, that's a stereotype, but frankly, that's a story I continue to hear and hear and hear. And there's vital ministry going on. And Jen, I really like what you said about deep learning. There are people who yearn to go deeper. They know they don't know everything. They know they need more equipping, and they're yearning for it. And it seems like somehow we've got to help match up what the vast resources of the institutions for theological education have and those deep yearnings. Is there one question you wish you'd ask of one of these people that afterwards you got off and went, I wish I'd done that?
You know, as we're sitting here talking, the question that I wish I had asked is, where do you see collaborative possibilities? And who is the dream team to work with? Because as we've been talking over the 6 weeks, what I have started to discern is that it's not just the need to diversify and bring new voices into the room. It's also finding those voices and putting partnerships in place where the money actually exchanges hands, where the knowledge exchanges hands, where the power exchanges hands. Right now, we're still having this conversation in a very kind of privileged way, a top-down, people at the top, people on the inside, making decisions about people on the bottom, people on the outside. And until those roles and those places and that money and those opportunities start actually changing hands and kind of getting mixed up, it's still a conversation. And so I think, you know, really asking, like, who are those people? Who are those positions? Where are those places where we can actually start to make these shifts happen? And I think there are some places where it's not as difficult as it may seem, but I think we just have to really think about it and identify those places.
At the end of each episode, we asked our guests, where do you have hope, or what gives you hope for the future of theological education? If we had one more minute, I would have asked them, and what needs to die? What needs to go away? Because if we are imagining and leaning towards a future where theological education is resurrected, something needs to go away. Something needs to die in that process. We can't just keep adding. We need to let some things go. And I think there are hard choices. And that applies to the church as well as it does to the seminary, those questions of what needs to stop, what needs to die. So I would have loved to have heard people speak specifically about what those things are, and then how do we deal with the grief of letting those things die?
That's a terrific place for us to leave this. Thank you for the conversations. I hope we can continue these with different folks. I heard all the way through your conversations a real gratitude and appreciation for the gifts that people were trying to bring to this. So I appreciate the spirit of this. And sometimes, though, that spirit can carry us into difficult and challenging places. And you did that with insight and grace. So Jennifer and Ryan, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you for listening to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
a project of the Macedonian Ministry Foundation.
The Ministry Collaborative nurtures a national network of pastors and congregations committed to faithful,
creative,
and courageous engagement in their communities.
Our producer is Marthane Sanders.
To find out more about our work of cultivating leadership that makes a difference in congregations and communities,
visit our website
at www.ministrycollaborative.org.